don't know if I should say after Dr. Jordan's talk that you should switch your cell tones off, please. Okay, I've got very little time. I've been visiting Egypt for at least the last 20 years, but what struck me in the last 5 years of going there was the increasing class divide. Massive differentiation between the upper middle class neighborhoods that have been growing up and sprawling, usually on the outskirts of Cairo, and the working class suburbs. One of the obsessions, of course, of the West and the United States in particular, under their sort of neocon ethos and ideology, was the obsession with the war on terror. And the only thing they could see in Egypt, as in so many other Islamic societies, was a conduct of a war on terror. So figuring out who are terrorists and how to combat them, and promoting what they imagined to be a moderate Islam. And right under their noses, a whole set of other things have been happening. Perhaps some of this will become clearer as I go on. In 2006, there was a political movement in Egypt called Kifaya. And Kifaya said Egypt should really be renamed Fasadistan. Fasad is corruption. It should really be called the land of corruption, because of the rampant corruption that has plagued Egyptian society. The UN Arab Development Report reported, one of its authors claimed that Egypt should now once again be called the 1% society, such as it was before the revolution of 1952, because effectively 1% of the society is benefiting from the wealth of the country. And the third instance of this growing divide is that if you look at the list of the top 10 billionaires, of the Arab billionaires, you'll find, as you'd expect, 5 Saudi Arabians, 5 from Saudi, not a single one from Qatar, 1 from the UAE, 1 from Kuwait, but 3 from Egypt. Egypt doesn't have nearly as much oil as, say, Kuwait or these other Gulf states. It has gas, but it, of course, leads you to question how these billionaires were created in Egypt. Now, when visiting Egypt, you can easily discover this class divide that is growing, with a country where, in a city as Cairo, with anything from 18 to 22 million, where most of the vehicles are really ancient, driving extremely slowly, but suddenly over a period of 5 years you start seeing, you know, Hummers and 4x4s and other fancy vehicles that really can't be used to the maximum extent because traffic at Cairo, you know, the cars usually drive at 40 kilometers per hour. Malls going up, brand named items, and only a very small section of the society enjoying it. For the rest, it's like watching some kind of movie going by of all these wealthy people enjoying this, but exceptionally few enjoying it. So I don't want to trace this too far back, but I think that the origins of the uprising is in the systematic humiliation of 30 years of Mubarak rule. But we can pinpoint exactly when some of the turning points happened. And that is, I would, for the purpose of this talk, start with 2006, December 2006, when Egypt had its biggest worker strike in 60 years, coming out of the textile, amongst the textiles and weaving workers. In 2007, there were 614 labor actions and strikes in Cairo. And it builds up from 2004 with more and more and more radical worker actions and labor actions, unreported, of course, in most of the media, in the West and in Egypt as well. So you have increasing radicalization of labor, the opposition to the Egyptian General Trade Union Federation, which is a state body. And very interestingly, 2 days ago, there was a massive altercation outside the offices of the trade union, the official trade union movement, where the workers are demanding that the leadership of the union, of the trade union federation, also be subject to inquiries for corruption. 21 members of the leadership, of the 23-man leadership of the federation, are members of the NDP, of the ruling party. So all the labor action that I've mentioned here comes sporadically, comes outside the framework of the official union, the general union. The workers are very largely successful. The workers are women, they are men, some of them are niqab, they have face veils, some of them don't, they are cops, they are Muslims. It's across the divide that there is this uprising. And in 2008, they call for a strike on 6th of April. The strike is ultimately aborted. But the strike has one simple demand, and that is a living wage and a minimum wage of 1,200 Egyptian pounds. Now, 1,200 Egyptian pounds is around, say, 2,000 rands. It's equivalent, roughly equivalent to 1,500. That's what they demand. The official union was saying they should accept 800 pounds. Through intimidation, this strike actually doesn't take place. But there's a massive youth movement that supports this through Facebook. And that is where the youth movement's name comes from, April the 6th. The April 6th movement is a movement of young people in support of the strike for a living wage that on their Facebook site overnight manages to have 100,000 supporters signed up for this. The April 6th movement, also the other name for this movement is the Khalid Said movement, because of the young man who was killed by security police and is one of the activists behind setting up the Facebook page and alerting young people with access to the internet to some of the crises in Egyptian society. So there's massive labor unrest. That's the one. The second one, massive unrest in the Delta area, the area to the north of Cairo. For the past 3 years, hundreds of thousands of Egyptians in the Delta areas, Bahalal, Kubra, Kafr al-Dawar, small towns, Mansoura, and so on, have been in ongoing unrest. When I was in Cairo last May, colleagues and I were just absolutely amazed that these things could go on and go on and report it as if nothing's happening. They were about water. In fact, one of the insurrections really in the Delta area was called the Thirsty Revolution, because people have no access to clean water. They're about water, they're about sanitation, they're about electricity, municipal services really, about transport. One of the frequent happenings in Egypt in this period, and going back to the late 90s, are the frequent railway accidents or ferry accidents. And when one digs deeply, you see, oh well, that ferry belongs to a leading member of the NDP, and it never gets investigated, or nobody ever gets taken to task for it. There's some investigation, it's covered up, and then it's hidden away. So you have labor unrest, and you have a massive insurrection, really, involving hundreds of thousands of town dwellers in the small towns in the Delta area. And then, of course, the political movement under Kefaya, which is an alliance of organizations, of oppositional organizations. Kefaya doesn't last very long. It peters out by 2006. But it does bring pressure, because there are lots of sort of well-off people involved, highly educated people, people who can use the media. Now, I think that the Ben Ali, fall of Ben Ali in around 14th of January is just the trigger. It's the opportunity. But they are already highly organized forces. I had absolutely no doubt that the Egyptians were going to take this through to the end. because of the experience in the past 4 or 5 years in persistent mobilization. And secondly, that there is a political culture of debate, of discussion, of organization in Egypt, of which the Islamists and the Muslim Brotherhood is but one strand. The fault of the Western media and intelligence has been to focus and to be obsessed with terror and this discourse. And here you have, in an Arab society, in a Muslim society, a peaceful uprising where the terror is coming from the supporters of the regime, using American weapons. They've actually picked up bullets and saying, made in America, made in the USA, and so on. And, of course, now the United States will come out and say, we can teach you how to be democratic. I mean, we can do this, as if nobody knew how corrupt Mubarak was, as if nobody knew all of this was happening. The fact is that these things were known. Some American and Western academics have been studying a whole range of movements, but some people in power prefer not to take the information that is not comfortable. So that is my sort of sense of where this is coming about, that is not unexpected at all. Thank you very much.